We've gotten mighty close to God over these past few weeks as we've wandered through the 40-year wilderness with the Israelites. God first draws near in that burning bush moment in which God calls Moses to do something that Moses is quite convinced he cannot do. Most recently, Moses, having said yes to the thing that he was pretty sure he could not do, has spent 40 days on Mount Sinai, about as close as he can get to God, when the Israelites are waiting down in the valley below impatiently and imperfectly. Time and time again, God has made it clear that she wants to be in relationship with her people. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You are my people, says the Lord, and I am your God. I am the one who freed you from oppression. Well, so what's behind that divine act of liberation? God says, I am the Lord their God who brought them out of the land of Egypt in order that I might live among them. The whole point of God delivering Israel was to make it possible for God to be close and near, for God to be living with them, with us, in the midst of God's beloved people across time and space. So you can imagine then, God having made this significant commitment to God's people, how it felt when the Israelites subject God to the whole golden calf incident of last Sunday. Not only did the Israelites violate the first commandment of loving God alone, right after they've been given the commandments, they're hot off the press when they build this golden calf, but they also have put an idol before God. At that point, God is pretty much over it. God is ready to break up with the Israelites, knowing that they had already broken the covenant God had established with them. Well, this is where Moses does some of his best work. Moses doesn't give up, and in fact convinces God to not destroy the Israelites, to stick it out with them. That brings us to the promises we read today from Exodus chapter 33. Moses said to the Lord, see, you have said to me, bring up these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, I know you by name, and you have found favor in my sight. Now, if I have found favor in your sight, show me your ways, so that I may know you and find favor in your sight. Consider, too, that this nation is your people. The Lord said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. And Moses is persistent. Moses says to the Lord, if your presence will not go, do not carry us up from here. For how shall it be known that I have found favor in your sight, I and your people, unless you go with us? In this way, we shall be distinct, I and your people, from every people on the face of the earth. The Lord said to Moses, I will do the very thing you have asked, for you have found favor in my sight, and I know you by name. Moses pushes a little more and says, show me your glory, I pray. And the Lord said to Moses, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim before you the name the Lord, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and I will show mercy to whom I will show mercy. But, the Lord said, you cannot see my face, for no one shall see me and live. And the Lord continued, see, there is a place by me where you shall stand on the rock, and I will cover you with my hand until I have passed by. Then I will take away my hand, and you shall see my back, but my face shall not be seen. That's what you all are coloring back there. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. My high school cross-country coach, who also happened to be my 10th grade geometry teacher, is one of the most universally well-loved and respected teachers and coaches I've ever known. Besides the memories I have of his consistent encouragement and the unconditional positive regard he had for all of his athletes, and he had a lot of athletes. We consistently had the largest girls cross-country team in the state, bigger than the football team, in fact. Well, some of the few things that survived my purge of all the papers a few years ago were the yearbooks that he would painstakingly put together at the end of each season for our team. There'd be the pages of scouting reports and the meet results, all layered in between pages of inspirational quotes that he would share with us throughout the season. There's one in particular that I can still remember. Maybe it's familiar to you too. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly. You may know those words. They are from a speech given by President Teddy Roosevelt in 1910, and despite the gendered language, yes, I think it applies to women as well. Although there are many arenas where we have not been welcomed, we just keep showing up anyway. Now, Moses knows that, like the man in the arena, God is willing to show up to try and really ultimately to fail with the Israelites, with us. God is willing to dare greatly on our behalf. Brené Brown, a best-selling author known for her expertise on vulnerability and shame, and she likes to say that she's really the only one who's doing this work in depth, because most people, once they start to dive too deeply into vulnerability and shame, try to get back out as fast as they can. But she's written several books, one of which is called Daring Greatly. And in it, she describes vulnerability as uncertainty, risk, and emotional exposure. And with that definition in mind, she writes, "Let's think about love. Waking up every day and loving someone who may or may not love us back, whose safety we can't ensure, who may stay in our lives or who may leave at a moment's notice, who may be loyal to the day they die or betray us tomorrow. That's vulnerability." By that definition, God is willing to be vulnerable with us. God chooses to love us knowing that we may or may not love God back. God chooses to love us knowing that God ultimately can't ensure our safety. Now, Moses wants God to assure them that God will stay in their lives, that God will be loyal to them until the day they die, even though Moses can't offer that same assurance to God in return. What Moses does offer to God is his vulnerability. When Moses begs, well, he says he's praying. I hear it more as begging. When Moses begs God to show him God's glory, Moses is really risking his life. "See me face to face," God says, "and you will die." But Moses is persistent in his vulnerability. He waits to see God's backside, better half, back parts, bum, whatever you want to call it. You can take it from there. And then if we go on a little bit beyond our reading for today, after God does his big dramatic passing of Moses by, God instructs Moses to come to Mount Sinai again, this time to renew the covenant that had been broken by the Israelites' impatience and fear. Now, throughout the history of our faith, meeting God on the mountains requires a certain amount of vulnerability. Think about all the times that Jesus would retreat from the crowds to the mountains to pray alone with God. I'd have to imagine that those were pretty intimate and vulnerable moments. To seek God as boldly as Moses did means risking finding out what God actually requires of us, which could very likely mean striving valiantly, erring, coming up short again and again, striving to do the deed, spending one's life on a worthy cause. Next year, I'm eligible for my first sabbatical, a tremendous gift that this congregation has committed to giving its clergy for 3 months every 5 years. It's really an incredible gift, and also, how has it been 5 years? Sarah Lund, a Disciples pastor who spent the weekend with us at the beginning of 2016, talking to us about the intersection of mental illness and faith, suggested that our congregation apply for a grant from the Lilly Endowment to help fund that sabbatical. We thought it was good advice, and so we did. We applied and we received word a few weeks ago that we received that grant. It's a big deal. It's $40,000. Now, the theme of the sabbatical is just this, that mountains represent a place of risk and reward throughout the history of our faith. The mountains are a place where we encounter God most fully. And so, yeah, Ben and I are going to head to the mountains for a part of that time. But one of the touchstones of this time of Sabbath for me and for our congregation will be Brené Brown's work on vulnerability. I'll attend one of her The Daring Way trainings. It's both in person and online. It requires a lot of hours to complete the training, but I can't wait to see what I learned from her about vulnerability. Likewise, I can't wait to see what you learn as well as you read together in small groups her book, Daring Greatly. In that book, she reminds us of some of the lessons we can glean from Moses' relationship with God, that vulnerability isn't weakness, it's just the opposite. That vulnerability is at the core of meaningful human experiences. That uncertainty and risk aren't always things that we choose, but they are things that we are required to respond to in our relationships with God and in our relationships with one another. That if we're willing to dare greatly and risk vulnerability with God and each other, worthiness has the power to set us free. And perhaps Moses' boldest moment isn't when he says yes to that burning bush. Perhaps Moses' boldest moment is when he risks daring God to stay in the arena with us, to accompany the people of God into the future God has promised them, that God has promised us. God's beloved, the year ahead will be filled with opportunities for vulnerability and risk for us. We'll welcome our new associate pastor, which will require creativity, courage, care, and grace. We'll take a leap of faith with our resources for ministry, with our general fund budget, even as we pay off the mortgage on this building. We'll experiment with a new model for ministry, SALT, Seasonal Action Leadership Teams, as a way to engage our shared ministry together. If there's anything that I know about this congregation, though, it's that God keeps showing up for us. God keeps showing up for us. God stays in the arena with us. And God has not given up on us. God has, in fact, dared greatly with us. Are we willing to keep doing the same for God?